Hi, good morning. Can I press the button or is it?
Yeah, it's on.
Okay, perfect. Good morning. Thanks, Han. Thanks, Russ. The purpose of my session today is to provide an update on the FASB segment reporting project. Just the benefit of people who are following along remotely, I'll be referring to Agenda Paper 27, which is available on the ISB website. The paper has three sections. I thought I would introduce each of the sections and then pause to take comments or questions from ISB or FASB members as we go through. So to begin with, Section 8A introduces the scope of the project. In general, the project is narrow in scope, and it's really focusing on two areas, the first being the aggregation and the reportable segments process, and the second being the disclosures that are required by a reportable segment. I'll talk a little bit about the actual work we're doing on both of these areas in a moment. We acknowledge that the scope of this project does not address some of the frustrations that stakeholders have raised about segment reporting. Some constituents have expressed concern about the potential abuse in identifying the operating segments and would prefer that a board tightens or changes the requirements on how segments are identified. In setting the scope, the board acknowledged the diversity of views on this matter. While some users might prefer a more standardized basis for identifying the other operating segments, others might prefer to see the operating segments through the eyes of management. The board also noted that in 2013, it concluded the post-implementation review that the standard is working effectively and that the management approach is sound. The board decided to retain the management approach as the basis for segment reporting and acknowledged that to address segment identification guidance would likely involve a more fundamental change to the standard. For this reason, the project as it's currently scoped does not intend to revise the definition of an operating segment because this underpins the segment identification criteria and the management approach. I might just pause there to see if any ISB members have any comments or FASB members want to talk about the scope of the project as it's currently constructed. Nope. Okay. Section B is the feedback that the board received in its 2018 aggregation. In terms of how we approached it, the board decided that it really wanted to focus on two alternatives for improvement. And to understand the effect of either of the two alternatives, it decided that we should conduct extended preparer outreach. Alternative one would reorder the process for determining the reportable segments and would move the quantitative thresholds earlier in that process. Currently, as we outlined in the memo, there are sort of six steps to how you determine your reportable segments. Alternative one would have flipped the ordering of step one and step two. The operating segments would be identified as they currently are today using the CODM function, and then the size tests would be applied, meaning that any individual segment that exceeds a 10% test would now become reportable and could not be combined. Alternative two considers removing the aggregation criteria. So once an entity has identified as operating segments, all of the segments will be reportable unless a practical limit is reached. In terms of the outreach, we spoke to 30 companies, of which 14 agreed to complete the written study materials. And we did note that both of the alternatives did result in additional reportable segments compared to current GAAP. Broadly speaking, the feedback on alternative one and on alternative two was mostly the same, although preparers really had three to four main concerns. First, the preparers observed that both the alternatives impair the natural groupings of similar operating segments. Segments that are similar, such as a REIT that identifies, for example, each shopping center as an operating segment, will be required to break out the largest shopping center, which impairs the natural associations with similar shopping centers or similar regions. The second concern that many preparers raise is that it will be an increased frequency of restatements of prior period results as a result of a single segment tripping a particular size test in one period and falling below the size test in the next. Many of our study participants had at least one of their operating segments that hovered around one of the 10% tests, and that flipping in and flipping out of reportability would destroy the trend information over time. And finally, the third main point that preparers raise is competitive harm. In their view, breaking out the largest operating segments would provide insights into the margins and other information that would affect contract negotiations to the detriment of the company. A couple of the REITs that we spoke to suggested that if the individually large segments or individually large shopping centers were disclosed, this would affect the tenant lease negotiations with particularly their anchor tenants. There are a few other points of feedback that we discuss in the memo. When we raised and when we reported back the feedback summary with the board members were concerned about the consequences of both alternatives. I think particularly our board members were concerned about the frequency of restatements of prior period information, which would change year on year. And they were particularly concerned that this would affect the investors' modeling. The board decided it wanted to undertake a second study on the segment disclosures before it was going to make any technical decisions. And so that's largely where we are at the moment. I might pause there just to see if ISB members have any kind of comments or observations about the first aggregation study.
Anne?
Thanks, Russ. Thanks, Lauren, and excellent paper. On reading this and all the feedback that you got through the study, I felt that the preparer feedback seemed to hedge you in. You know, it didn't seem to give you suggestions of ways forward. It was all blocking. It was all blocking every idea that you had. That was my feeling. I might be harsh on the preparers, but that was my feeling, that you seemed to be blocked in and they didn't give you any openings. I did notice, of course, that with this, you're focusing on the preparers. It's possible that you already have a good understanding from earlier work what the users want to see. So it was very much the preparer group. So I know you're going to talk some more about the responses, but have you got any other comments on how the staff and the board reacted to such blocking feedback?
I'd say broadly speaking, I think knowing that we're speaking to preparers, they're not necessarily going to give us a ready-made solution. I think one thing I didn't put in the paper that may be of interest, we did take both of these two alternatives to our investor advisory committee. And I think perhaps maybe this was more my impression and maybe other FASB members want to jump in here. I was a little surprised that the investor community was less favorable to either of the two alternatives as well. I think when they saw the effect of both alternative one and alternative two, they were not necessarily supporting the board to proceed with that either. I didn't put that in the paper just merely for length and time, but that was one of the things I think I was surprised at the takeaway from that. I also think that the board was largely concerned about the restatements and how frequent it was going to happen. Do other FASB members want to jump in here, or?
Go ahead, Christine.
I thought that was a fair observation, Anne. The thought process that I went through on this was, first of all, the group that we were looking at here were all companies that use the aggregation criteria, but most companies don't actually use the aggregation criteria. The best, we don't have a lot of data on this, but anecdotal data that we have from, I've had from discussions with the SEC and then also some data that we got from our PIR implies that only about 30 to 40% of companies actually aggregate. As a result, both of these solutions would do something with that group, but neither of the solutions would have actually dealt with the other 60 to 70% of companies that aren't currently aggregating. So there was a potential for some improvement, but it was for a smaller group. But then on top of that, we heard from preparers that if you change the rules, then I will change the way I do things in order to get back to where I want it to be. And so at the end of the day, it was like, okay, well, we can impose all this cost on the system, hopefully to move the needle for a third to 40% of the companies, but then how sustainable is that change going to be, and are we just going to put a lot of cost into the system and then see things go back to the way that they were before? And I have a paper that I'd be happy to share with the ISB as soon as it's done, which it should be later this week. And it just looks at the change in the number of segments over time. And what you can see is that if you go back to 1976, before there was any FASB guidance for segment reporting. There was SEC requirements at that point, but there were no FASB requirements through to the present day. Every time there's a change in the guidance, so when 14 came out and then when 131 came out, you see a pop up in the number of segments and then it goes right back down again, pop up and then right back down again. And so that pattern we've observed twice now. And so ultimately, where I ended up was, I think there is a problem. I think the problem is more with companies that are only providing one segment or maybe two segments, and they're doing that through their internal organizational design so that they're not aggregating. That's how they define their operating segments. And that neither of these solutions were going to fix that. And I don't know what the solution is because everything we've tried in the past doesn't seem to work. And so that was kind of where I ended up in terms of the numbers of segments.
So Gary, you want to defend the U.S. preparer community?
Like me too. I can pull out some of my old comment letters from former life, but but I'm not surprised. They're not fully supportive of this project. And leave be kind. Laura, actually, a very good paper. Just want to test understanding. Go to paragraph 24. I've got it about segments being on the cusp at 9% or 11%, but you wouldn't propose to hold the 10% rigidly. If something dropped to 9% and the company still wanted to disclose it, would you be prohibiting it? I wouldn't think so.
No.
And because there's changing segments is a big deal. There's one thing about collapsing into other because you miss the size threshold. There's another thing about just re-slicing and dicing, you know, what's in what column of the defined segments. But again, from former life, I can assure you when you start changing segments, your investor relations people spend a lot of time educating the analysts, particularly the sell side analysts that follow you. It's a big deal. And then as you change segments, I mean, it's just not a matter of moving stuff between columns. It's the identified assets, it's the goodwill, it's the goodwill recovery test. It's a long list of things that get considered. I'm actually not surprised preparers wouldn't be pushing harder for a geographic view of the companies as opposed to this could be a revenue basis typically. And then just on the chart on paragraph 14, looking at your REIT with 493 operating segments, so obviously every mall is its own business unit. But if I understand that right, the nine reportable segments would be the nine largest malls and the other 484 would be combined into other. Is that how to read that?
If I'm correct in thinking, this was actually a REIT that did communications towers. So these were communications towers around various international networks. So if I'm correct, this was not a shopping center one.
Okay.
But yes, largely what you said is correct. The first 480 odd would be in the all other, and the largest nine would be individually shown as
collectively to be less than 10%.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Good luck.
First of all, I appreciate this wonderful study, especially we test our proposed alternative one and two based on those 14 entities. I think the finding is very helpful for us to know that what's the issue there, and if we try to approach more pure management approach, what the results will have, and whether there are new issues will come out. I think alternative one and alternative two try to actually to encourage or to require the entity to disclose more, reportable segment based on pure management approach. But I think that there will be some more new issues, not more, some new issues come out. As I said that, so I'm very interested in the response or in the feedback from the users. I appreciate that the CFA Institute did a research, a survey, and the surveys. I just had a roughly look at the survey and what their suggestion. I think they suggest three. One is three areas, mainly three areas. One is that they supported the aggregation of the operating segments into reportable segment. It seems that not they just want to purely management, you know, approach. They still would like to those operating segments to be aggregated. Secondly, they preferred the application quantitative criteria before the application of qualitative criteria. It's like our alternative one, to change the order to introduce the quantitative criteria. It's understandable. And the third is that they think that this they sought some kind of refinement in the definition of qualitative criteria. That is our existing standard, that aggregation criteria based on the similar economical characteristics. If there are, those operating segments have similar economic characteristics, they should be in the same reportable segment. But I saw the result. It seemed that about 63.5% of users, they think that we should define more precisely what's the meaning of the similar economic characteristics. So I'm thinking that because we are going to do second research or study, so whether we are going to do some further work to not only to go to the purely management approach, actually we are trying to refine the existing qualitative aggregation criteria. Do we have any intention to do by this way? And secondly, I also found a very interesting finding from the survey. The survey said that it reviewed regional variations in the response to the questions. It seemed that in American or in America's region, they were very close to the overall averages, but in Asia-Pacific region, they most likely they favor the improvement to the existing standards, such as to limiting management choice. So it's different from the purely management approach. And those in Europe, Middle East, and Africa region, they less strongly favor limiting management choice and were less strong, but most time still in majority in making improvements to the disclosure in areas such as disaggregation. So it seems that different regions have different concerns and different solutions to the questions. So I'm not sure whether we also do some further research, because it seems that different regions have different issues and different concerns and different recommended resolution to those questions. So I also wondering whether we have further research and further, we are going to do further work with regard to those concerns.
I guess there's a couple things there. I think you mentioned, and I'll go back in order. So I do think you're right in there was some feedback in the CFA study that they would like us to tighten or potentially look at the meaning of similar economic characteristics. That was something that the board had considered, and it decided not to include that in part of the study, largely because I think it was about 2005, maybe 2006, the board, the EITF, I'm sorry, not the board, actually did look at a project to provide some clarity about the meaning of economic characteristics and the meaning of similar economic characteristics. So I think in this particular point, our board decided not to pursue that in terms of going forward with that as an option, but certainly that's something we could come back and have another look at. I think it exposed that as a consultation document, and the feedback was that it might not really be, it may not be fixing the problem, and so the board set that effort down. In terms of your second comment about the regional differences, I agree with that. I think when we spoke to the CFA, they came in and presented their findings to our board. They did note that there was very different regional responses. I think the way I might have interpreted that is that it largely comes from potentially cultural origins as well, that potentially the Europeans or and that feedback group may be more more accepting of a principle-based type model, and so they were more happy to continue with a principle-based, whereas perhaps maybe other areas in Asia, like you mentioned, maybe more culturally, their settings may be more desired to have more kind of rules and limiting management choices, I think is your word. And I think the way it was couched to us is that perhaps it was a reflection of cultural responses.
Thank you. Neely?
Thanks, Russ. Two things. First, I wanted to just call out Lauren. Even though we don't have an active segments project, Lauren has been fantastic in helping Aki and me stay apprised of what's going on the FASB side. So thank you for that. We because it is a converged standard that staff work behind the scenes to make sure that we're staying on top of things, and Lauren's been really good about doing that. And then secondly, Christine, you made some comments that made me think I probably should have put my card up when you asked about questions about scope, because I have four observations, and they all sort of come back down to wondering more about the identification of operating segments as sort of connected to the aggregation piece of the assessment. So one thing, Christine, you mentioned was 30% of companies seem to be aggregating. So if part of the problem that users are experiencing is wanting more columns, then it would seem like maybe part of the source of the issue is the identification of the operating segments. There was also a comment about if companies didn't like the answer, they would change how they do things. And there was also a hint of that in the paper about comparability and if they're trying to maybe reverse engineer into comparable segments with their peers. And that to me almost suggested, well, is there a need for words in the standard to improve enforceability? Because that sounds like if you can reverse engineer to whatever you want, it sounds like there might be a compliance issue there, and if there might be a need to have better words in the standard. And then the other point was on the single segments. So what I've seen from experience is that a lot of the single segments tend to be because management is running their business on a functional basis. So you'll have one group that's responsible for revenue, another group that's responsible for marketing costs, another group that's responsible for HR types of costs. And so there is no, the CODM isn't really looking at measures of profitability. And so when you look at the definition of an operating segment, it becomes more difficult to find a division by segment because there is no measure of operability or of profitability. The other thing I've seen, particularly in the high-tech space, is that companies run their business based off of revenue only or based off of non-financial metrics. So again, there's no measure of segment profitability in a financial sense. And because of that, you kind of come to a one-segment definition for the operating segment, and then you don't even have to go to an aggregation question. So I think maybe all of that's coming to whether there's a connected piece here between aggregation and operating, the identification of operating segments, and maybe the thinking behind that.
I think, Neely, the gating issue here is not the aggregation criteria. It's the definition and application of the CODM in identifying the operating segments. So with that off the table, it's really hard to move the needle in terms of the extent of disaggregation, the columns, because you would have to do, I think, in order to really attack that problem, you would have to go into the CODM and see if there are ways to improve it. The thing that's interesting about the way that the CODM is defined and applied, it's completely circular within the standard, right? Because in order to identify the CODM, you have to identify the segments. And in order to identify the segments, you have to know who the CODM is. So when you have what we would call a completely endogenous system, any point you want to start in there, you can end up where you want to end up. So my personal feeling is that's really where the enforcement difficulty comes in. And I have some preliminary data on 2016 SEC comment letters. And among companies that provided segment disclosures, only 2.5% got comment letters that year. So it's a very low probability event that you're going to end up getting a comment letter on your segments. And most of them weren't on identification. It was on their entity-wide disclosures. So I think that there's there's some real issues there. It's just not clear how to get at them. And our project was scoped in such a way, we chose to scope it in such a way that wasn't something that we were looking at.
Yeah. The only thing I would caution is just the data on the SEC comment letters. Having been there at that time, the SEC staff had taken a hard look at how it had historically been interpreting FAS 131 ASC 280. And in the 2014-2015 time period, it really reconsidered and kind of had this back-to-gap approach. And there was an effort to slowly kind of push that out. So we didn't want to – sorry, they didn't want to go all out and start issuing a ton of comments to a bunch of companies. So 2016 may have been a little bit of a quieter period under that philosophy.
That's good to know. Thank you.
Chung Wu.
Thank you. Now, this paper is really informative and helpful. And also, our IFRS 8 is quite similar to this US GAAP. So I can read the future of IFRS 8 because of your work. So that's why I'm very interested in your work. So generally, the ideas are very good in a just narrowly scoped on the number of segments. However, I'd like to suggest one or two things on alternative one here. I'm wondering why you are changing step two and step one. Step two is looks like a kind of a rule-based in a standard 10% rule. So that will come to the top of the oldest list. Then maybe easily step away from our IFRS. You know, our IFRS is a thing we are based on the principle-based standards. So. Step one and step two, the order of these two steps are very significant in a change to us. So the first question is why you are changing. Another thing is based on the preparer's comment on your alternative one, they think that just increasing the number of segments is not important. The quality of the information of those things are important. So that concerns me, whether just I'm saying that there are many ways to increase the number of segments under this, our current step 1-6. For example, in the 75% rule, you can increase maybe 90% rule. So that will increase the number of segments. There are many ways. Also, we can change the number of segments by, modifying the aggregation criteria in step one. If you just, make improvements on the aggregation criteria in step one, so then we can increase the number of segments. So there, you said the issue was there some concerns by investors about the number of segments. But I think they are more concerned about the quality of information, ultimately. So, this is a very good trial, but, the first thing we need to describe what the real purpose of the project for investors. And there are many ways to increase the number of segments in all these current steps. So that's why I'm suggesting some improvements on your approach once. So that's please think about the kind of possibility.
I think you're right. There's a number of levers that we can pull. You're right in that there's the 75% revenue lever that we can change around. We, in this particular alternative, we decided that we're going to pull the 10% levers and move it around. I think the reason why I believe that we chose to focus on moving or flipping the order of step one and step two is because it has the biggest impact, because the steps operate in a particular sequence. So it's not necessarily going to result in a lot of difference if you change the 75% revenue test, because it's at step five, whereas step one being the 10% test, if you flip that ordering, you're going to get more segments. Like that just by logic, because it's a reductive process, if you think about it kind of going through a sieve, by the time you get to step five, you don't really have much more you're dealing with. You get the biggest bang if you work at the 10% test at the front of the process. So that, I mean, that's broadly speaking. I take your point of the, like, you're focusing more on the rule, and what about the quality attributes. I acknowledge that. I do think that there's two things there. One, we're not coming up with the 10%, so we're just playing around with largely the rules that are baked into the model today. So it just makes it a little bit more palatable when we go out, because we're not coming up with something, a new bright line. So to that extent, I think it kind of takes a little bit of that pressure off. I do take your point about the qualitativeness. I acknowledge that. I'm not sure that we have a good answer for that, because broadly speaking, it's hard to come up with qualitative criteria that have discipline of force of law and enforceability to make a difference here. I don't know how to, I guess maybe that's my shortcoming. I'm not sure I know how to come up with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Hal?
Let me see if I can frame a couple of my comments, going back to what Christine said right at the beginning. She said, you know, a large portion of these companies only provide one segment, right? And I think sometimes when we get our feedback from investors, we forget about the fact that most of the people we're talking to focus on a relatively narrow set. They focus on the largest, say, one-third of the companies. The largest one-third provide about 96% of all the market cap, right? So most of the dollars are being invested in the one-third. What those people are looking for are not necessarily more and more segments. What they're looking for, and I think the phrase that we used early on in this process, they're looking for one level down. So sometimes I think we say, oh, you know, a lot of companies don't provide segments, and that steers us in one direction. Where we're going to focus on where are the dollars being invested in and what is the problem they're trying to solve. So I just caution everyone as we talk about this, think about, are we talking about where most of the dollars are invested, or are we talking about where most of the companies are? And I think Ann's comment about we blocked at every turn, absolutely right. And they go back to the comparative harm. And I just, in paragraph 26, it said, you know, providing more segments or would provide additional insights into operating margins and other performance information. That sounds like a horrible outcome. We shouldn't be providing more information. One of the things that's come back to us both from companies and from investors is that, look, the companies already know how each other is doing. They're in, they're digging and analyzing. There's not a lot of new information that's going to come out. What investors are looking for is a cheaper, easier, quicker way to get to some of this information. And I think we've got to think in terms of how the investor world is changing, how they're under cost pressures. Is there a way to get the information in an easier, cheaper fashion? And I think a lot of this project is about that as opposed to getting them information they couldn't get. They can get this information. It's just a question of can they get it in a cheaper fashion. This brings me all to when I was looking at paragraph 14. This is where the table is provided, and I complimented Lauren and her team. This is an excellent table because it really does say we focused on getting information from really the largest companies, and the largest companies are already doing a pretty good job of getting us segments. So how do we solve the problem of getting the investor one level down? And I've got problems, frankly, with alternative one and alternative two. And I'm wondering if something we shouldn't explore is taking just current gap, don't make any changes in terms of the aggregations, segment identification, any of that. But if they want one level down, just give the investor four aggregated segments, the largest operating segment within that reportable segment. Problem done. In terms of you gave them significantly more information. If you look at it, you probably end up somewhere between alternative one and two. So it's this, not this massive change. So I think there's solutions, but we have to keep in mind what problem are we trying to solve. And sometimes I think we run off in different places by thinking about, you know, how many companies don't report more than one operating segment, things like that. So just a couple words of caution. And I think as we discuss not only this but other issues today, think about how the cost structure of the sell side and the buy side are changing, and it may influence us in terms of how we think about this issue and some of these other issues.
Gary?
Yeah. Very quickly, reacting to just some of the earlier comments. First of all, what Hal said, I actually think the competitive harm argument is overused, and I won't say there's never any, but I think it's never as great and broad as might be argued. I mean, you've heard it. I remember 1976 when segments first came out. It was my second year auditing. Heard the arguments then. Well, given a few years, the things that were argued about not doing were done, and, you know, the world went on, and given a bunch more examples. So I think... I wasn't going to raise this, but earlier on, somebody had mentioned about similar economic characteristics. My instincts, Lauren, is you probably can't get out of this project where you want to go without addressing that subject in due course. And the issue becomes, what's the difference between a segment versus just a marketing channel? And so think of the scenario where you have one set of products. It could be retail, commercial, doesn't matter. One executive responsible for all of them. He reports to the CODM and shows his results, but inside of that, they've got direct sales, they've got middlemen sales, you've got stores, you've got internet sales. They've all got very, very different gross profit margins, but the return on sales might be about the same. So you take wholesale price, but you get rid of a lot of the cost. Or you've got a retail price, but you've got all the direct costs, and they're all handled through the same fulfillment system. And so on. So internally, they're not thinking of them as different segments, but they will have very, very different gross margins, potentially. And I think you bump into that all the time trying to define your segments in there. So I instinctively don't think you're going to get through this project without reopening that in time.
Sue?
So for me, as I think about this phase of the project, I very similarly think, sort of like what Hal was saying, in terms of, is this a problem in search of a solution? And the reason I go down that path is when I think back about the discussions we had with our investor advisor committee several years ago now, the focus when we were talking about segments, before we even had an active project on the agenda, was some of the members that really just couldn't get over the fact that there were certain companies that had a single segment. And when you look at the actual statistics of companies, the large firms with a mean of 4.6 segments, all firms with a mean of 3.5 segments, you sort of wonder, well, did we get it that wrong? And sometimes when you try to fiddle with the quantitative and qualitative analysis around aggregation, as Christine pointed out, then it can be manipulated and structured around. And so it kind of gets me to a place where I wonder if this isn't really more of a compliance issue in terms of the way some of those single-segment companies are actually applying the guidance, if, in fact, they do aggregate. But I do think what we have learned, and Lauren has schooled me on anyway, is that there certainly is diversity in the way companies are applying the management approach and the CODM approach. And that's not to say that that area should be significantly revisited. I think what it does suggest is that there perhaps may be some opportunity to provide some implementation guidance that would perhaps narrow some of that diversity so that those that aren't actually aggregating, or those, even when they are aggregating and determining their operating segments, we can maybe perhaps drive some consistency from that perspective.
Mary?
In the area of decreased comparability, Lauren, that's something you talk about around paragraph 2223. And I guess I wanted to ask if you've probed on that a bit more, because it seems to me that, first of all, it's a concern and argument that's brought out and wielded against some of the things that you're looking at. But second, people say, well, we're getting approximate comparability today because the way we aggregate kind of offsets. Here's my interpretation of this. The way we aggregate counterbalances the fundamental differences from CODM. You know, so the aggregation brings some degree of comparability. And I wonder if you've thought about the extent to which it's true comparability versus superficial comparability that might lead people to think things are actually more comparable than they are. And I don't know that, you know, I come back to what Gary was just saying about, you know, sales, but if you have different channels, that, you know, those may be very different margins. So I think partly it's expressing some skepticism about how much weight you attach to concerns about reducing comparability. If the comparability is surface rather than a real underlying comparability, might make you feel better about how you're doing your analysis when actually there are things that you're not seeing, and whether you've thought at all about kind of probing on that comparability point as you look at if you're going to invest in pursuing these alternatives and the arguments that have been presented pro and con about them. I don't know that a project on comparability for its own sake is good advice.
Yeah. I think on this one, this was interesting because it was raised by a number of companies. And I think broadly speaking, if you, for example, took two REITs, the way it was kind of explained to us, each REIT might identify its segments based on the lowest level of property that they own. For example, it could be shopping centers, it could be apartments in Manhattan, it could be strip malls in LA. But then being able to pull them all together and show them in regions, so New York versus LA versus San Francisco, provides some level of comparability because they're shown, while each of the properties themselves are very different, grouping them regionally into New York, LA, San Francisco somehow provides comparability between REIT 1 and REIT 2. And I agree, like, the argument about comparability is a little challenging under a management approach. I totally understand that. It was a little baffling at first to get my head around what was trying to be explained. But I think that's largely what they're saying is the levers of both segment identification and the ability to aggregate gets them to clump them together into similar ways as their competitors. I guess the follow-on argument here is also that if you only affect the aggregation criteria or the 10% test, then all of the other follow-on issues affect people who aggregate. So all of the disclosures, for example, Topic 606, some of the insurance related components in there, they disproportionately affect companies that aggregate and not those that don't. And so you're harming this, not only is comparability harmed, but they're saying there's these follow-on issues that happen because you're only affecting those that aggregate. I get the argument is a little complicated, but that was kind of how it was presented to us, as it affects both.
Do you want to?
Yeah, I was just going to directly respond, Mary. In terms of comparability, I don't personally place a tremendous amount of weight on that issue because I don't think there is comparability. By and large, I think that what we end up with, and some companies have told me this, we have false comparability. We have this, you know, certain segments of the investor world that, you know they're being screened out based on certain measures. So they kind of manage to that measurement. They clump things together or get to ratios within a certain range. So they just get through screens. So it may look like they're comparable, but the numbers have been managed to just make it work for them because there are certain investors that just, you know, feel they have to have that level of, if it's not within a certain range, we're not going to invest in or we're not going to do any additional work. So I think there's that issue. I'm not certain that we're ever going to solve this comparability issue because, again, different measurement, different products, different geographies, different ways of managing. This notion of comparability is just way overblown. It's right there with competitive harm.
I was just wondering whether how much you weight the arguments that you get back about if you do X, this will harm comparability.
I start with the premise that there is no comparability or very minimal comparability, and it's certainly not on an aggregated level. It's going to be much more to segment, and even there, it's going to be very rare that I got truly two segments of two companies that are truly comparable.
Gary? No, we asked the question.
question before, what is the problem we're trying to solve? To me, as a CFA and a former investor, when you think about, I look at U.S. companies, large cap and mid cap companies, about 50% have reasonably good disclosure. So you might have three or four segments. You'll have five items per segment. The big five that I think are important would be revenue, margin, capital spending, D&A, and assets. And then you have 25% of the companies that have mediocre disclosure by segment, and then 25% poor. And I would define poor as two segments and two items per segment, maybe revenue and margin. So here's the two hats that I wear, former investor and current FASB board member. When I used to be at Lazard, companies would come through our office and say, I have all this data. I can push a button. I can look at revenue by day, by week, all this other information. I have asset information. And then you come here to the FASB, and people tell us our systems are antiquated. We can't get that data. And I think what's happening is there's a grain of truth in both of those comments. One, when I'm a CEO or a CFO talking to investors, I have to give people a full picture of what we're doing. When I'm the chief accounting officer, I'm thinking of internal controls. I'm thinking of auditability. So they're basically two separate and distinct almost processes. And I think that's the problem. The real problem is those companies that are large multinationals that give you almost no disclosure. And it puts the companies who are giving good disclosure at a disadvantage. And I think that's unfair to both the companies who have good disclosure and to investors.
So, Lauren, you want to describe Section C?
I can do this super quickly. I'm sorry, I won't even work off my prepared remarks. Basically, you can see on page 12 of the memo, we've just kicked off this study. We've only kicked it off 3 weeks ago. The study has 8 issues in here. They cover a range of disclosure issues, rather, and just kind of to help understand, when we've approached the study, we've assumed all the gating questions about segment of identification is gone. We've assumed all of the gating questions about aggregation are gone. These are only the disclosures that would relate to the reportable segments or how you get to your reportable segments. I think the one that perhaps are the most of interest here are when we're looking to require some potentially new disclosures by reportable segment, there's really two ways we're looking at it. Either we're going to look to add a few things to the list, which is issue 2, and we talk a little bit in the paper about those issues, about the particular items we're thinking about. Or issue 3 is maybe moving in a slightly different direction, moving us into a more principle-based model. And so we potentially require the disclosure of the significant expense categories that are regularly reviewed by the CODM or that form part of the measure of segment profit. So these are probably the two main ways that I think we're looking at actually advancing the cause of more disclosures by reportable segment. I think the other thing that may just be really interesting just for the discussion today is this idea we're exploring as a disclose or explain requirement. That is something a little new. I guess perhaps the thinking there is our board said that the management approach is a little unique. The way you disclose or not disclose things is a little unique. It doesn't work this way in any other part of the gap. And say they thought that perhaps this disclose or explain requirement about why you have not actually provided an amount by reportable segment would be consistent with that uniqueness. So these are the sort of the three salient ones I just want to maybe kind of just leave with the group today as perhaps like the key leading things that we're testing in this latest study. We haven't really had any rich feedback yet. We're still doing walkthrough calls, so I can't really even provide you with a verbal update today on the sort of any of our learnings. But these are the main ones. I'm happy to take any comments that you have on this.
Nick?
Thank you. It's a shame we've kind of run out of time because I think this is as important, the number of rows as the number of columns, but we always end up spending most time about the number of columns. But the CFA survey kind of, verifies that it's just as important. Generally, I'm behind the management approach, but I'm also skeptical about adding other things to the list given the previous experience that I'm not sure it really makes a huge amount of difference. So I think the secret here is actually to actually require another number, and that would be total assets, and to require companies actually to say if they track that, to provide that. If they don't track it, to provide an estimation. And from that, actually, if it's tracked, then from that would follow. You could then say, actually, then you could have depreciation, amortization, capex, because if you're tracking total assets, you'd be tracking those other things. And I just wonder if we have to break the logjam a little bit by actually saying just this one item. And I think that would solve a lot of it would certainly give Gary his five items where it is tracked, where you get an estimation. I think that'd be some interesting information in its own right and insight in terms of how the company is managed as well. So I accept every company can't provide this. Some companies do manage it on a single basis. But there will be ways of them to estimate economically how that was split. So I just think we need to think about this a little bit differently going forward. Anne?
Lauren, when we met a year ago, you presented some very interesting ideas about presentation in segments in your paper last time, and I don't see them anymore. So we had three different tables of how segment disclosures might look, and these were about having lots more line items, so following on from Nick's comment. So can you tell us about what's happened with that work?
So we did bring to the board a couple of... Sorry, to get to the eight issues that are in the study... We brought to the board a package of three or four different ideas that they could consider along the way. Requiring it in a table and requiring it in a particular format is the board did not decide to proceed with that in the study. That doesn't mean that it won't come back. It's just they did not want to go through with it at this time.
As Neely talked about earlier, we're committed to sharing with you all of our research and what we find and to keep you up to date on the course of the project. Is there anything else on segments before we move on to the next topic? Okay, Hans?
All right, then we move to primary financial statements. So, are you going to kick off?
I do, Hans, yeah.
Okay, very good.